On EWTN Global Catholic Radio, you'll hear a wide variety of speakers discussing a multitude of topics, from atheism to zeal. But what are the fundamental realities that often lie hidden beneath these topics? Well, Father Thomas Dubé uncovers these very foundations on the program Bedrock Basics. Now here's Father Dubé.
Welcome to Bedrock Basics. I am Father Thomas Dubé, and we resume this week pretty well where we left off last week. You will remember that we were talking about perspective, seeing large things in human life and eternity as large and small ones as small. And we made quite a point of it that this is very hard for us to do unless we are close to sanctity. The saints do this almost automatically. I don't mean in a mechanical sense automatically. I mean that they are so attuned to the mind of God, who always sees things as they are, that they just see their details of human life as they are. So we made that point at length, and we considered the Lord himself, perfect perspective. Of course, he's perfection in the flesh. We looked at typical traits of the saints, and that brings us now to where we need to shift gears a little for another aspect of this perspective. And here I'm going to ask you to reflect with me on some thoughts about turning the tiny into the huge. Last week we rather made the point that we should not make small things big things, but now in another sense, I want to say that we make small things, tiny ones, into huge, extremely valuable realities. And what I mean exactly will be clear as we go on. We want to turn minutes in our lives into eternal values. We want to turn the routine into pearls of great price. And there's three ways in which we do this. And as we do it and live this, we are growing in perspective, in another dimension added to what we considered last week. By genuine love, routine and very small actions become large in God's sight. As Jesus himself put it, if you give a cup of cold water to one of his, notice the motivation is immensely important, and that is going to be stressed right here. Motivation. If you give it to one of his least ones, for his sake, you shall not lose your reward. So that small action, a cup of water, in his name, is immensely valuable. So that, as he said elsewhere, what we do to the least of his brethren, we do to him. So that, again, once the motivation is there, we are in great shape. Now, the second reflection on this point of perspective, almost in reverse, but certainly compatible entirely with what we've already said, what the world considers unworthy of notice is transformed when it's done with a high degree of love, especially a burning love. For example, somebody right now, thousands, millions of people in different time zones of our world are preparing the next meal, peeling potatoes, dicing carrots, roasting the meat, whatever it is, routine things that are done millions of times throughout the world each day. Now, if there is somebody, as I'm sure there is someplace, and maybe many somebodies, who are doing these things with a burning love for God and those they are serving, they go together. Remember, we cannot separate love of God from love of one another. There's only one commandment by which we love God, ourselves, and our neighbor. Always because of God's loveliness, because there is no loveliness except in God. So if somebody is cooking that meal with a burning love, what is very small becomes great. Another example. Changing the baby is not only a small thing, it is not the most pleasant thing to do on the planet. And yet, if that is done with a great love, it is tremendously valuable. Lots of people in our world right now are teaching class. That is considered, in the world sense, maybe a greater thing to do than to peel potatoes. But what actually determines more than exactly what you're doing is the love with which you do it, or the absence of the love, which then decreases the value of what you're doing. And so people who are teaching the class not simply to earn a salary, which is good in itself, of course, no objection to that, but who are teaching a class because they love the pupils and really do love them and want to help form them, that they can mature and grow as human persons, and also to earn a living for themselves and their families. And so people who are teaching that class, again, with a burning love, are doing tremendous things, not simply having people who are going to be competent in some field of work or other, important as that can be itself. In our world today, there are many people who, without even trying, are annoying other people. You know, we are so different, one from the other, that even when there's no guilt involved, our very differences annoy other people. Some people are fast, and they annoy people who are slow. And the slow people annoy the people who are fast. Get on with it. What's the delay? And they annoy, and nobody is at fault. So if in our world right now, there are people who smile when they are annoyed, what is a very little thing receiving a bit of inconvenience becomes a great thing because of the motivation. There are millions, I'm sure it is millions at least, people in our world who are right now suffering, some of them bitterly, bodily suffering, and of course even worse is interpersonal sufferings. I mean hatred, abuse, and so on. But nonetheless, all these people in our world who right now are suffering, some of them on hospital beds, some of them in nursing homes, some of them are shut-ins, if they are suffering with much love for the Lord on His cross, they are great indeed. So once again, the small thing has become a big thing. Each one of us is in every activity that we engage in, right now, my giving this talk to you, right now you're listening to it, and when you cease this, you go and do something else, as I will also. If we are operating with love, we're making ourselves eternally lovable. If we're operating with hatred or some other very unworthy motive, we're making ourselves eternally hateful. This is why it is true to say that each person, right on through life, is fashioning his or her destiny. We are doing that constantly. So, if I'm well motivated in whatever it is I'm doing perhaps a very small thing, but it becomes a great thing. The third reflection that I'd like to suggest as we shift the gears for a few moments here, then we're going to get back to what we were saying last week and draw this to its conclusions. The last reflection in this gear shifting is that when we see things as they actually are, remember per, speech array, perspective coming from those two Latin words, we see through reality, we see it deeply. When this happens and we live it, everything takes on a new sparkle. This is one reason that the saints are the happiest people on the planet. When St. Paul says, for example, rejoice in the Lord always, he really means that. But do notice, it's in the Lord. There is no rejoicing always except in the Lord. And this is part of that package. There's much more to the package we've talked about in others of our series. The one on contemplation, for example, or John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila. These people really have what we're talking about completely. So that when we have this proper motivation we're presently talking about, that makes small things, insignificant things, hugely valuable, then we are ourselves going to be very happy people for a number of reasons. And one of those reasons is that boredom vanishes. It's one of the traits of the saints. And if you read their lives, you know it. And even better, if you live that way, you know it. They are never bored. Just never. Some people might have trouble believing that. But my response to them would be simply, well, live that way and you'll find out from your own experience. Now that brings us then to the last of our areas on this question of perspective. Namely, I should like to offer some suggestions for growing in what we have been talking about. Because one does not acquire this perspective, just by living longer. Wonderful if it would happen that way, but it doesn't. There are young people in their teens that have a marvelous perspective. I've already seen it because they've grown so deeply in God. That's where it mostly comes from. But I want to make some suggestions, offer some hints to you to grow in perspective. The first hint is, every now and then, imagine yourself some quiet time. Maybe it's only 5 minutes or 10 minutes. But once in a while, imagine yourself on your deathbed. And suppose that you're lucid. And suppose you reflect on your life. How will it look then? That is a marvelous bestower of perspective. Face up to the fact that very soon you are going to be in eternity. And just look on your life that way from the perspective of your deathbed, supposing you have only a few hours to live, maybe 1 hour. The Lord put this matter so well, perfectly. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and suffer the loss of his soul? Most salutary to think that over from the vantage point of my deathbed. Suppose I were a worldling. I hope not, but suppose. And I look over my life, and suppose I've been after vanity, or power, or lust, or avarice. Whatever the capital sin you want to put in there, go ahead and do it. Gluttony would be another one. That the big thing in life is exquisite eating and drinking. And I look at that from the vantage point of my deathbed. It bestows a whole lot of perspective. And this is one reason, by the way, that a retreat is so valuable for people, that they have a weekend, or even religious can have 5, 6, 8 days of retreat. And there is such a thing, as you know, of a 30-day retreat. They really take a look at what's big in life and what isn't. And the deathbed is a perfect vantage point from which to make this assessment. The second suggestion for growing in perspective is to ask myself, and that means each one of us asking his own self, her own self, what are my values right now as I'm living supposedly in good health, or even ill? What are my values right now? Do I have really only one supreme fear? And the supreme fear is to lose the eternal ecstasy that is heaven. Just imagine, suppose, to use a worldly example, suppose there's some movie that you really want to see, and you can't see it. You would be disappointed. You would feel, well, I would love to see that. It'd be a couple hours of really good entertainment and so on. And you miss that movie. Well, missing eternity is just infinitely more important than missing anything on earth. And just take a look at whether your supreme fear in life is to miss the eternal ecstasy that is heaven. I use that term, some of you may recall, every now and then. And some people would probably think I'm exaggerating, but I am not. It is an ecstasy that never bores, never gets dull. It can't, because one is drinking infinite beauty. You've heard it said, I've often thought it myself, I have to grant, that the only sad thing, as death comes closer and closer to every one of us, the only sad thing is not to be a saint. Or at least not to be coming close to being a saint. All the rest is going to disappear shortly. 1 Corinthians 2:9, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor has it entered the heart of man. You cannot even imagine what things God has prepared for those who love him. And to miss that is just dreadful, even aside from considering the punishments of eternal disaster, whose name is hell. Even aside from that, it's a disaster of endless magnitude. And to consider this carefully is a very good help to seeing things in perspective. 1 Corinthians 10:31. Whether you eat or drink or do anything else, do all to the glory of God. That, of course, is just exactly the way the saints live. The next little suggestion is from Hebrews 4:13. Develop a concern for God's omniscience and a complete unconcern for what human persons think about you. Aside, we do need a reasonably good reputation to do our work, of course, and that's proper and good. I'm not speaking about that. But worried about what do they think of me? What really matters is what does God know about me? In chapter 4 of Hebrews, verse 13, we read, no created thing can hide from him. Everything is uncovered and open to the eyes of the one to whom we must give an account of ourselves. Recalling that periodically so we don't forget it is a big help to perspective. And lastly, growing in perspective, a hint toward growing, is to realize vividly that in every action and omission, as I noted briefly a few minutes ago, is making yourself either more lovable or more hateful for eternity. So if you're doing all those little things we began with today, and doing them with much love, you're becoming lovable forever. And that's why you're going to be in eternal ecstasy, because you're going to be immersed in endless love. And to bear that in mind is immensely helpful for perspective. Let me tell you just a little bit of a story. Two stories, but they're really one. I was about a year ago doing jury duty in Washington, D.C. I could not get out of it, even given the travels. And after jury duty, it was about 4:30 in the afternoon, I got on the metro and was walking back to home base. And up comes on the sidewalk a young African-American, 12 years old or 13, beautiful smile on the kid. And he said to me, and I jotted it down later, I didn't want to forget it. He said, just this. He said, I'm Eddie. Will you say a prayer for me? And of course I said, yes, Eddie, I'll be glad to say a prayer for you. I think that is just tremendous. This young kid, in our day in which youngsters have so much trouble being what they ought to be, here's a beautiful example of somehow or other, it must be the grace of God, he's just a wonderful youngster. And he said it with such a nice smile, a manly but boyish smile. Then I walked down a few more feet, maybe 10, 15 yards, and I saw this woman ahead of me stoop down. She picked up a little piece of trash. I don't know if it was more than 2 inches in diameter. And she walked about 100 yards, and as she went by on her way home, she dropped it in a trash can. That reminds me of the widow with the mites. Very small things, but done with tremendous love. Tremendous in God's sight. That is, again, that perspective seen in reverse. Now, For the remainder of this program, I'm going to speak with you about a brief bedrock basic. Remember the first session we had, I said some of them would be pretty long. We just finished a rather long one. Some of them would be very short, and some would be kind of middling. And I'm going to take one of the kind of middling, but kind of short, too. I had just finished a Sunday Mass in a parish, and I had given a homily, and after Mass, I was back in the sacristy, unvesting, and in comes a rather large, sizable, big young man. He was, I think, in his 20s. And he came up to me, and he said, "Wow." And I forget whether the bear hug came first or after, but he said, "Where is that text?" And he gave me this big bear hug, much bigger guy than I am. And he wanted to know where that text was. It was one that I had used in the homily, talking about a very different subject from what we're talking about now. And I want to indicate something of bedrock basic here. That's why I bring it up. I was not saying anything special that any other priest ought to be saying. Anybody who proclaims the gospel ought to be saying this sooner or later. It was the power of the text that had struck him with his big wow and bear hug. And the text was Luke 10:16. Jesus speaking to his apostles, to his infant church. "He who hears you hears me. He who rejects you rejects me. And he who rejects me rejects him who sent me." Now, that young man was really alive. He had heard a momentous statement, tremendously important. How do we know God and his will in our life? Well, the Lord is answering that. There are other things to be said about it. We might get to it with another bedrock basic later for further consideration. But he was saying something momentous, and this young man was alive enough that he saw it. And that's why he reacted the way he did. He was astounded at that text, that to a group of human beings, his infant church, and as he says elsewhere, "I am with you all days to the end of time," to give a group of men, that infant church, that kind of authority is absolutely, well, stupendous. And the young man picked it up. The Lord wants for sure that his message not be mangled, because both the Lord and his message are precious. And the Lord therefore took this step, which is certainly a bedrock basic. If we want his message as he meant it, he's going to have to do something to preserve it that way, because we human beings are just most skilled at getting things wrong and misinterpreting them. And so the Lord was taking care of that in his own wisdom, which is the real answer. He does not want his message mangled. So this is how he was going to do it. He could have decided to enlighten each human being with each decision. And even that, of course, while it sounds appealing as a solution, given the woundedness of the human race and what we can do with inner lights, whether they're genuine lights or not genuine, is fantastic. And so he knew what he was doing. "I'm going to establish a living teaching office that will be faithful because I keep these people from going astray." That's the reason. And he decided, therefore, that there would be what we call the magisterium. Notice how any basic document needs a living interpreter to keep it understood rightly, so that the United States Constitution demands a judicial system. They are far from infallible, as we all know so well, but nonetheless, it has got to have somebody to interpret what it means. It is just not enough to have a constitution. Nobody would hold that, I'm pretty sure. Although there are people who hold that the Bible is enough for me, I don't need any church telling me what it means. That is just untenable if one thinks about it for a few moments. And so the Lord decided to set up that church which goes back to him. And that certainly is a bedrock basic. He who hears you Here's me. The young man was right to react with a bear hug. Not that I am something. I didn't deserve really a bear hug. I was simply giving what the Lord said. That's all. And that's enough. And that man, young man, was correct because he was so much alive. And I'd like to share with you another text. There are lots of them in the New Testament like this. What I just said is not the only one by a long shot. But in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 13, we read St. Paul saying the following. Another reason why we constantly thank God for you is that as soon as you heard the message that we brought you as God's message, you accepted it for what it really is, God's message, and not some human thinking. That's it. That's the same idea that the Lord had said in his own fashion, how this is God's teaching. You see, if each one of us interpreted the message according to our own ideas, what we think it means and should mean, well, of course, it's a human message, automatically. And the Lord is very sure that it's not going to be a human message, and that's why he said what he said in Luke. And so St. Paul concludes, rightly therefore, we thank God that we have this message and it is a divine message. For what it really is, you accepted it, God's message, not merely human thinking. We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.